I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Listening, Ned is staunchly no pre-wash.
Well, I used to be
for the dishwasher.
Yeah.
Well, now that our dishes don't get clean anymore.
Yeah. Then it broke our dishwasher. So, joke's on me.
Whoops.
Whoops. Shouldn't have trusted a BuzzFeed article. Journalistic standards. Anyways, there we were at the beach. I see you walking from far away, and then I'm like, where is Wesley? And then I see him. He is wearing a fully, like, 1920s blue striped swimsuit with a face smeared full of blue ice cream. We went to the beach this weekend and got ice cream, as one does, and the child is now big enough to hold a big-ass cone of ice cream himself, and he's so proud that he's eating it himself, but, like, it seriously, he had, like, a blue goatee, just, like...
He did.
Just, like, smearing it around his face.
Well, the funniest thing is when we went to go pick out the ice cream, there's all the normal flavors, like cookies and cream, vanilla, chocolate, and then they have one, like, seriously highlighter-colored... ice cream.
Yeah. It was just called blue.
It was just called blue.
Wesley said, I want blue.
Of course he wanted blue. And I didn't put two and two together. He had green poop for like 3 days.
Yeah.
And then I finally was like, oh.
I don't know what like color wheel type of stuff was going on there. Like brown plus blue equals green.
It was probably just like, you know, blue 32, you know, it was like whatever the food coloring was.
Red dye number 5. Yeah, you were out like deep Googling, what is wrong with my son's green poop?
Yeah, I was Googling like, what is wrong with my child? What have I done that has given him this green poop? And everything online said that it was probably like leafy greens. And I was like, I'm such a good parent. And then I was like, I gave him blue ice cream 2 days in a row.
It's like you were wondering why on the drive back from the beach, he was like, just kicking everything.
Yes.
Welcome to Baby Steps. Ariel is 32 weeks pregnant now.
I am.
We're getting down to it.
We are getting down to it.
Ariel, let me read you some facts about your baby.
Okay.
Your baby.
I like that you're calling it my baby, as if you have no part in this.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm just here for a sacrum massage.
You know, I hate those.
We took this birthing class, and they're like, pregnant women like it when you massage their
pregnant
sacrum.
Pregnant women love it when you massage their sacrum. And
it's
they
like
did
your
it.
Lower
and I was
back.
Like, don't touch me. That feels weird. I don't like that.
Anyways, your baby is as big as a cantaloupe.
Cantaloupe? A little one?
That makes sense. I mean, you've got like a little, a little small volleyball.
Yeah. A child-sized volleyball.
A little cantaloupe going on. What else? Baby organs are fully formed. Whoa. Okay.
I've actually heard that when babies are born, you know, so this is like third trimester, but if babies are born right now, they're obviously preterm, and their lungs aren't fully developed.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I didn't finish reading the sentence. Baby's organs are fully formed except for the lungs.
Oh great. Yes. Okay, good.
I'm
glad that you are reading the full sentences.
Just the cliff notes, you know. Uh-huh. I don't want to plagiarize what to expect 32 weeks, but I am heavily using them. So thank you, what to expect. But the chances for survival are really good.
The fact that you use the word survival... Just made it very real to me. I don't know that, you know, you could have said like the chances for thriving or that, you know, the chances for having a healthy baby.
Yeah.
It's like chances for survival. It's like, are we sending our baby out into the woods?
In the 1700s? Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty real.
No, you're right. You're right. Yes. Babies born at 32 weeks usually have a pretty good stay in the NICU, but they are healthy, healthy kiddos.
And that is what we're going to be talking about today is our birth story part two.
Right.
What happens after the baby is born?
Well, where do we leave off?
Well, we also have a couple of your stories that the audience that you can look forward to.
And a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm. So thanks for leaving those 5-star reviews and writing your stories in. We're going to read a couple today. Yeah. So we left off. The baby was born on your chest, skin to skin.
Poop everywhere.
Poop everywhere.
Specifically meconium, which is like tar.
Mm-hmm.
It took, I don't think I took a shower for like 2 or 3 days.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I just didn't think about it.
No, you had to have.
No, I just didn't think about it.
Oh.
I like wiped it off.
Oh,
but,
wow.
But, you know, like here I am, it, like a new, I don't think I took a shower until Wes got a bath.
Yeah.
So Wes still had like crusty blood in his hair. That's very real.
Wow. Survival had, like, and crusty blood.
Wes still had like crusty blood in his hair, and I still had probably poop on my chest for like 2 or 3 days. I was just so tired. I think I like slept, breastfed, slept.
Well, and also we were coming, it's like the labor started at midnight.
Right, exactly.
So we basically pulled an all-nighter.
Yeah.
Then you're pulling another all-nighter, and then a third all-nighter, and then by that point, you're in a very weird state. You're in a fugue state.
I probably took a shower the next day.
Yeah.
I probably took a shower like 24 hours later. You know, because like, by the time that you, okay, so basically, we had the baby. I'm exhausted, but, you know, happy, holding our beautiful baby boy.
Yeah. That was like the nice moment.
Yes, yes.
And then he latched onto your titty.
there were some wonderful, the hospital that we were at had like lactation consultants who were in the room when I had, like when I had Wes.
And didn't they give you a compliment like, oh, you're a strong squirter.
Sorry, what? No, they definitely did not say that I was a strong squirter.
Yeah, but like I'm paraphrasing.
It was something much like warmer.
Yeah,
where they were like, oh, you're already
a gentle
producing
dribbler
or something. No,
right.
Yes, I did get a compliment because I was already producing the like really thick stuff that you're supposed to get like right after labor.
Right. The good stuff.
What's it called?
It's like high
colostrum. Yeah. So we chose to breastfeed Wes, and so I was already producing some colostrum, and he was able to latch, even though he was very small, which that is generally a problem with small babies. You know, Wes was only 5 pounds 13 ounces, and usually with like babies that are quite small, they have trouble latching because they're faces just aren't big enough.
Oh,
I think.
Wow.
I assume that's the problem. Maybe they have like underdeveloped mouth muscles or something. But I just assumed that his mouth was just too small.
Just titty too big.
I don't know. But yeah, and so that was good. And then they, you know, they kind of moved us along and put us in a put us in a wheelchair, and they were like, okay, we're gonna take you to, you know, postpartum, like the recovery area.
Right. And I got to have my skin to skin time too.
That's right. All
ripped off my shirt.
All of our pictures of Ned with Wes in those first few moments. Ned is not wearing any clothes. It's really funny.
Like, do you need to take my pants off too?
I can take off all my clothes right now.
You sure?
I'll take off all my clothes right now.
We don't need skin to skin on the thighs.
There's like a sofa.
I'll do it.
There's a sofa in the delivery room, and Ned It's just laying there. Like, you could have been buck-ass naked and could've with been. The baby on
Wish your chest. Wish I had been.
With the baby on your chest. Yeah, you were pretty happy about that. So that was good. Yeah. And then they wheeled us to postpartum. I did snap a picture of the like labor bed mm-hmm. before we left, which was just a disaster.
Oh, I don't want to see that picture.
You've seen it, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, I have. Yeah. I don't want to see it again.
No, don't want to see it again.
It looked like the end of a horror scene.
I did a little bit. Yeah.
Just like blood and fluid everywhere.
Yeah, like pillows and sheets. I don't even know why they give you pillows and sheets. Well, actually, I did appreciate the pillows and sheets. Yeah.
I remember you were very I think it was the doctor or someone that said you had very minimal tearing. And you were like, I had very minimal tearing.
I did have very minimal tearing.
I'm very proud of that fact.
I know. Yeah. I almost didn't remember that.
It
because
still means like a little bit.
There's a little bit of tearing. Because like basically after labor, you know, they sort of whisk, like you get to hold the baby. And so I think I was holding Wes, and then my wonderful doctor, Sarah, she's like going to work. She's like, okay, I'm just gonna numb it real quick and da 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 da. And I'm like, I don't even care.
You're like,
I don't even care.
I don't care what's happening.
I'm fine. And then 12 hours later, you're like, holy fuck, what happened? Yeah. Yeah. So then we got to post the recovery area.
They gave you panties with ice in them.
Yeah, I mean, they're not exactly panties. They're like mesh.
Yeah, it's really just a device around your crotch for holding ice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what a stripper would wear, but for ice.
Right, exactly. Oh my gosh, can you imagine a stripper in those panties that they give you at the hospital?
Well, now I can.
I mean, they're certainly easy to...
Just with ice everywhere. Like somebody's very into that.
She's just handing out ice.
Here's some for your drink.
Here's some for your drink. Fascinating. That would be a really interesting fantasy.
Yeah, so I thought we were just going to kind of leave the next day or something.
Right.
It was kind of shocking to me that it was a 3-day affair. I mean,
I was not ready to go home.
So now I get it. Like,
you trust me to take care of this child?
I wouldn't. I'd be there for like a week.
The nurses were like showing us how to swaddle, and I remember both of us were just like,
oh, I think I forget how to swaddle.
Can you do it again?
Wait, no, you just mentioned that. And I was like, it's something about triangles and
corners. Oh, no, you don't remember?
It's something like triangle, triangle, corner, flip, twist. Oh, like, no.
We're going to have to watch a YouTube video or something.
Oh, no, I'm not prepared to be a dad again.
Oh, no.
What are we doing?
You know what I realized the other day is I don't remember.
This is supposed to be an advice podcast. I guess it's also a comedy podcast. Thank God.
Thank God. Oh, what I didn't remember, I realized the other day that I was like, how much do newborns sleep?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Should I wait?
Like,
what?
Like a little? You said something like, oh, yeah, remember when we did like shifts? Like you go to bed at 8 and then wake up at 2? And I was like, oh, no. I do remember that. Daddy does not want to go to bed at 8 and wake up at 2. Very few people want to do that.
It's true. So that we could each get 6 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right. Then. 8, 9, 10. Yeah. And then wake up at 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would sleep from 2 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we would both be awake during the day.
Right. Take a hard nap.
At least try to be awake during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would say that the best part of, I mean, the part that I remember and the part that I'm looking forward to is napping with a baby.
Yes.
On your chest.
That was pretty special.
But we have a toddler now.
Mm-hmm.
And that may not happen
in exactly
the way that we are expecting.
Only one of us can nap with the baby on our chest. The other person has to.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Take care. This morning he wanted to do artwork, which was painting the floor.
Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, that's delightful.
Yeah, I tried to redirect it towards the paper.
Uh-huh.
There's a little bit of floor painting going on. Anyways, we were there in the hospital for a couple of days, learning how to swaddle, learning how to breastfeed. Mm-hmm.
Wes was fine.
Yeah,
there was, you know, so he didn't immediately have to go anywhere.
It was actually pretty normal. It was, you know, he was early, but we were just having like checking off all the boxes.
Yeah, he went through all of his tests and, you know, just going through the hearing tests and the seeing tests and all the different things. And mm-hmm. they were like, great, great, great. I loved the nurses. There was this one redheaded nurse who was so sweet and she was really good at swaddling. And so I would always be like, can you swaddle him?
Can you swaddle him? It's like really good when you do.
But, you know, he was like in the little bassinet next to me and I had my hospital bed, and we did not bring anything to the hospital really, because we didn't know what to pack the night before we mm-hmm. left. I think I had to ask for a toothbrush.
Yeah.
The only thing that we packed was snacks.
Goldfish. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really need some toothbrushing to balance.
Yeah.
It out.
So I had to ask for a toothbrush. You know, a lot of people. In the next episode, we'll talk a little bit about like what to pack in a hospital bag,
mm-hmm.
because I think this time we will pack a hospital bag.
We need to do like the stuff episode.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
What stuff
do you not
do you
need?
Really not need?
Well, clearly you don't actually need anything because we didn't have anything.
We'll rate everything by like it, love it, and gotta have it.
Yeah, no, I like didn't end up taking a shower until the next day. And I remember that shower was pretty rough. Like I sort of stood there in the shower, and it's like the first time standing for, you know, at least 48 hours or something like that, and you know, sort of washing the sweat and the blood and the poop.
It's really quite a graphic experience.
And like you're in a hospital shower stall, which I'm sure you can imagine. You've been in hospital shower stalls before.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a stall with like a nylon sheet covering the thing. And you're just like, oh.
But the nice thing is they often have a little handle attachment.
I don't think this one did. It was it was like one of those ones at like a campsite.
Oh,
I know.
I like the hospital shower stalls with the handle.
Because
so you have a catastrophic knee injury, you're sitting down, putting your knee out, then you just like, put it all over your head.
Yeah.
Like move it around.
I do remember it being like a very warm experience. And and so they gave me like the medical grade shampoos and all that sort of stuff. And I was just very thankful to have a shower.
Yeah.
To have something, you know, I don't even think I used the shampoo. I think I just like rinsed.
Was there like, healing cream?
There was healing happening. First I had to wash it,
uh-huh.
you know, and so that was a struggle. You know, because I had like stitches and so, you know, washing it, you get these like Perry bottles, which are bottles that when you pee, you hold them upside down and you could spray them just for like cleaning, because
mm-hmm.
you don't want to
Right.
You don't want to wipe with toilet paper
because
you basically have an open wound,
you have a wound
on your vagina.
I remember they did a bunch of checks on Wes. They, you know, made sure he had 10 fingers, 10 toes.
Uh-huh,
but then they also made sure that he had a butthole.
I don't remember
like,
that.
The nurse is like prying apart his butt cheeks. I'm like, what's that for?
did you actually ask?
Yeah.
He said, what are you looking
for?
I was
like, what's going on
what
there?
Are you looking for?
And she was like, I'm just looking at his butthole. I was like, why? And she was like, oh, you know, to make sure he has one. I'm like,
cool.
No, that does make sense.
I guess that checks out. Cool.
She's like,
and
what?
Does he?
And how is it? She's like, good.
It is present.
It checks off the box. Okay. Is it? That's important. You know?
I do kind of wonder what their like checklist looks like. You know?
Mm-hmm.
10 fingers, 10 toes.
Has butthole.
Has butthole. No tail. Yes.
So we get everything done. We've got 9 out of our 10 checkboxes, but the last checkbox mm-hmm. is something called the car seat test.
Which not everybody has to do. We found this out later that you only have to do this in California if your baby's under 6 pounds.
And it's a test designed to make sure that you can safely transport them home from the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Say you're stuck in traffic. You're on the highway, you can't pull off.
Yep.
If the baby starts crying, if they're small, you know, maybe they get tired out, they can't hold their head up,
uh-huh.
and then they start losing oxygen. Very bad.
Exactly.
But, you know, the test is like pretty extreme. It's
a 90-minute
long test, and you're not allowed to like...
With a newborn
intervene.
Sitting, well, you actually can touch the baby, but...
It's like you're not allowed to give them milk or something, right?
You can even give them milk.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Then why did we...
Because our baby was doing great and nobody warned us that, like, this was a thing that could happen,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, because at this point, we've bathed, we've been there for 3 days.
I took one trip to load up the car.
Yeah.
So the car is half full.
Ned took the bouncy ball to the car
mm-hmm.
because we no longer
Very
needed
important.
It. And my parents went out and bought a car seat for us. They brought it in so that we could take him home.
Mm-hmm.
And so the nurse comes in and she says, okay, well, you know, before you leave, we just have to do this quick car seat test. And I was like, great. Okay. Well, I'm just going to pop in the shower while you're like, you know, doing that. Cause they were going to take Wes to the nursery and do the test there.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, cool. Okay. Well, yeah, just bring it back when you're done. And
so then I go, you know, after the test had been going and I figured, oh, okay, this is just how it goes. They take him somewhere else and that's what happens. But, you know, he started fussing, you know,
because he's like, 3 days old and hasn't been fed in probably, you
yeah,
know,
it's a 90 minute
two
long
hours.
Test. He's like, he's only awake for... like 90 minutes at a time. Anyways, I walk in like, hey, the test is about done. I should pick up that baby and get to going. And I walk in and they say, oh, I'm sorry, he failed the test. I was like, what?
Sorry, what?
They're like, yeah, he started crying and his oxygen levels dropped. I was like, what? And then I see them take the baby, put him on a little carrier, cover him with a glass box, and I'm like, no, not the glass box.
Not the glass box.
Like, can I? And they're like, yeah, he has to go to the NICU now. I was like, what? I mean, this was all, of making it sound funny, but it was really not funny.
It all happened really fast, and
it felt like he was just being whisked away.
And it was really scary. Because they, you know, they told us, oh, his oxygen level. Well, so we kind of walked in right when they were taking him out of the car seat and putting him in the box. These NICU boxes of like, you know, with the holes
yeah,
where you can touch
like
him and all that
kind
of stuff.
A bed with a kind of plexiglass thing. I guess they do that so that they're safe from germs.
Or safe from people touching them, or I don't know. But yeah, so we both kind of walked in right when that was happening, and we were like, "What is going on? What's happening?" And the nurses are like, "His oxygen levels are dropping." You know, basically, it felt like an emergency situation where I was angry, when I saw what was happening, I was like, what are you doing to my child? You like let his oxygen levels drop? What is he like? Is he dying? What's happening? You know? And so, and they're hooking him up to all of these, you know, he's got all these stickers on him and like all these different tubes. And when they wheel him into the NICU, they actually give him an IV, you know, which on his teeny tiny little hand was, I mean, they're like, you know, they're baby sized IVs, but he was a little guy. And so, you know, he had to have like a paddle. He had a little IV in his little hand.
Crying, and the IV is like the size of his forearm.
Yeah, it was really scary. It was really, really scary. I mean, it's been almost 3 years now since we went through that. And so, you know, looking back, we can kind of think of it as a, you know, something that we went through. But at the time, it was a really, really big deal.
I had no idea what to expect, didn't know what a NICU even really was. And you know, you walk in and you see all these, you know, some babies that had been there for weeks, or some babies that were very, very little, and other babies are undergoing a blue light treatment, or I mean, there's just a whole bunch of different serious complications that can arise that are
so
all
many,
like, happening there.
So many complications, so many reasons why women go into labor early. You know, preeclampsia being one of them, where like, you know, if or gestational diabetes, or, you know, there are just so many complications where it's like, it's no longer safe for the mother to have a child inside. And so, you know, they need to come out.
In retrospect, we had a very mild NICU experience, you know, I mean, some of our friends were there for weeks, and if something happened to them, those first couple of hours were very scary, because they were just running a lot of tests to make sure that there wasn't something wrong or a reason why the oxygen was dropping. But the conclusion was that it was just he was a little too small for that experience, and his, you know, neck muscles weren't quite strong enough yet.
He needed to get bigger.
And it was really frustrating for me, because I didn't know that we were allowed to be in the room with him.
Right.
Or give him milk or anything. Like, we could have
helped.
I feel like if we were right there next to him, we would have avoided that.
Agreed. I know. I was mad. At the time, I was very, very mad.
Yeah.
I remember the overwhelming feelings that I had were sadness, just because I remember you and I, well, so I had been discharged, so we no longer had the our room.
Oh yeah, oh my god, this was a whole other thing where
we no
it's
longer
like
had a room in the hospital.
Now that the baby is separate from Ariel, they're two separate people, and Ariel, the person, is done with her hospital stay.
Yeah.
And baby, the person, is now checked into his hospital stay. And it was like, you know, the first answer was, oh, well, you guys you'll go like sleep at home in your house and like come back during the day. We're like,
no.
What? No. We're not going to do that.
He's 3 days old. I'm used to, I want to be with him. I want to sleep next to him. You know, I remember at that point, they told me that I couldn't breastfeed him because he was hooked up to all these wires and everything. And so I had to learn how to pump. And so somebody brought me into the hospital pumping room, where I met a couple of other very nice ladies who had their babies in the NICU. And, you know, we would sit there for a couple hours a day, just, you know, reading magazines and making milk for our babies that were in the NICU. But they gave us a hospital room.
They called it a courtesy room.
A courtesy room.
Like, well, thank you for the courtesy.
Yeah.
But it does make sense, you know, if you're there for a month.
I mean, I imagine there
aren't necessarily.
there are you know, babies that are born at 28 weeks or something like that that have to stay until they're 36, 37, 38 weeks old.
Yeah.
And those parents are going to and from the hospital every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, some of the stories that I've read on the, you know, the emails that people are sending us, there were babies born at 28 weeks.
Whoa.
You know, that are doing great now, but, you know, just horrific hospital stays.
Yeah. In this courtesy room that they gave us, it was more like a standard hospital room, so it didn't have a couch for dad anymore.
Single bed.
So it was a single bed. So we both, like, cuddled in the single bed.
Yep. Cried.
And we're so exhausted. Yeah, we cried and then fell asleep.
Yeah. And then we just spent our time going back and forth to the NICU.
We started reading Lord of the Rings from the beginning.
Yep. To Wes. Yep.
It was horrible at the time, but in retrospect, it gave us a lot of benefits. It taught you how to pump.
Right.
It allowed us to actually rest during the night because there were, you know, 24/7.
Right. I actually remember the first night, you know, I was basically trying to feed him every 2 hours or so because that's what we were told to do. And I remember one of the NICU nurses at night comes up to me and she was like, you know, I can feed him for you if you want to, like, sleep for a few hours. And I sort of looked at her and I was like, what? Really? You would do that?
Yeah. For me?
For me?
Yeah, that was like, we ended up getting the best sleep that we would then get for 3 months.
I know. There was one story that somebody sent in about a pair of twins. Mm. And one of the twins had to go to the NICU, but the other one didn't. And this was in the 70s, apparently, where they kind of, they didn't really, like, allow anybody to hold the babies or, like, touch them or talk to them. And so the baby that went to the NICU, like, was sort of, she was there for maybe 4 weeks or something like that. And when they brought her home, she was such a different baby from the other baby.
Oh, yeah.
Because she was so used to just laying there.
Oh.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is interesting.
Yeah.
Well, after 48 hours, we retook the car test, sitting there reading Lord of the Rings to him and feeding him when necessary.
I remember thinking 48 hours, like, that's a long time to be away from my child.
Yeah.
But that was the minimum amount of time that he had to spend in the NICU because of the drop in his oxygen levels.
Right. So you're able to retest after 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it went great. He passed the test.
Well, we were really nervous about it.
Yes, we were very nervous about it.
Very, very nervous.
Yes.
And so what we did is, like, we sat there with him the whole time. I had milk ready.
Yep.
I bundled him up so that he wouldn't get cold. And
we put a little blanket over him.
We were there the whole time. He slept through the entire thing.
Yeah.
The entire thing. It was such a, like, non-event the second time.
And then we checked out of the hospital as if it were a hotel. No, we were discharged from the hospital.
Yes.
They clipped the little bracelet off of Wes once more, confirming that, like,
This is your child.
Because you had a little bracelet on too, right?
Yeah.
It's like, they don't clip that off until it's like, okay, he's yours now.
Yeah.
Your responsibility. Filled out his birth certificate.
Uh-huh.
And then got him in the car. And now we put him in the car seat. now knowing that he will survive and be fine in the car seat. I remember driving, like, just white knuckle, just so nervous. We had to get gas, and I was worried that there was, like, fumes from the gas station.
I know. I remember being a little, like, anxious about that. I was like, we don't have gas in the car? Are you joking? We're taking our newborn to the gas station?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, everything when you're a new parent is such a big deal.
Yeah.
It is such a big deal. Every little thing, every first, every, you know, drive in the car.
Everything is a first.
Everything is a first. I know.
Yeah.
And you're just thinking about this teeny tiny little human and
Oh, this is your first time pooping on the couch.
Oh, you're pooping. How cute. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or like, you know, like little stretches. Or I don't know. Just everything is a big deal.
Yeah.
And everything that you do, everything that the baby does, you're like, oh my God, is he okay? Oh my God, is this the right color? You get it.
Is that supposed to be there?
I remember they gave Wes some formula in the NICU and it like changed the color of his poop. And I was like, oh my God, is he, like, is he dying? He was totally fine.
So yeah, that's the end of the story. We took him home and started our life together.
Is that the end of the story?
Well, that's just the beginning of the
story.
That's
really the beginning of the story.
We bring him home and we start getting settled in our new life together, which was really more of a temporary situation because we were in the middle of moving. Like, right. And you know us, we're like very active moving around. I mean, I think the reason you went into labor was like we were building a deck that day.
Well, yes. I mean, now that I know that I have a short cervix,
maybe that was it.
I do wonder if I had a short cervix then. But yes, we were building a deck. And also, you can't blame yourself.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And that is something that I have also learned in this second pregnancy is, you know, for the first one, I was so... I blamed myself for going into labor early because we were building the deck, because I was very active and moving around all the time. But the fact is you can't put that kind of blame on yourself. There are so many reasons why you could go into labor.
You're just doing your thing.
Yeah.
It could have been anything. Could have been short cervix.
I could have had a short cervix the first time.
The Rachel, our producer, was saying that during the lockdown in April, preterm births drastically reduced because people were kind of forced to basically...
take it easy.
Yeah, take it easy.
That is really, really interesting. Yeah, I mean, that is like one of the... So there actually, preterm birth is a really big issue with like low-income communities because they... take a lot of the jobs that are like standing on your feet all day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right.
And they don't get, you know, they can't take the time off between 38 weeks and their due date or something like that. You know, it's like their job is so demanding that it sends them into preterm labor.
Wow.
It's a tough situation.
Can't blame yourself, but you can blame your employer. No. I wouldn't say that we took Wes into like this beautiful nursery situation. We kind of brought him to an active construction site.
Yeah, I mean, we had no nursery. We did, so like his crib was not built, but he wasn't going to sleep in a crib the first few nights anyway. We had an old... cradle.
Antique.
An antique cradle that my dad had built. So I guess it wasn't technically antique, it was vintage. A vintage cradle that like we could put him in to sleep. But most of the time we actually just use the bassinet attachment to the stroller.
Right. Yeah. We just had the stroller like parked, locked, and then boom, bassinet attachment inside there. It
because
was very comfy.
Because everything was packed and we didn't even like, you know, I of course wanted this, you know, beautiful nursery situation with all the stuffed animals.
We wanted to be able to nest and to paint swatches and just like organizing drawers. But when we went to the hospital, the nursery area was full of boxes because we were about to move in like 5 days.
So all the stuff that we had purchased or, you know, planned for this new baby was not available.
It was in boxes. Your parents did a great job of clearing the boxes out, making at least a serviceable nursery.
Yes,
there's space to move around.
We had a diaper changing area. Yes. We had a rocking chair. I mean, and then we had, you know, like a place for the baby to sleep, which, you know, the whole experience really just reminded me, and I think about it now, being prepared for this one and having a nursery and thinking about...
Now it's the opposite. Like, we've been preparing for weeks.
Yeah.
The nursery was done 2 months ago.
Right, because we had all this stuff already.
Yeah.
You know, but like, you really don't need much.
No.
For a newborn.
You know, whatever your situation is, you figure it out.
You figure it out.
It's kind of that's when people ask me, like, how will I know when I'm ready for kids?
Yeah.
I have come to realize that you will never be ready. Even now, the second time around, I am not totally ready.
You're not feeling ready?
Yeah, I'm on a less ready day. Maybe other days I feel more ready.
Yes.
It's more of a spectrum. I'm feeling less ready today.
It is more of a spectrum. It's, mm-hmm. it's, you know, some days you feel very ready, some days you really don't.
Yeah. But you're never ready. You just figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, you just kind of take it one day at a time or 90 minutes at a time.
90 minute intervals.
Yeah.
I mean, I also remember we had some very close friends who I actually met as like a pregnant woman, and she was also pregnant. It's now Wes's, like, one of Wes's good friends, but they were also like moving and doing construction at the time. And they were in the same boat where, mm-hmm. like, they didn't even have a place for baby to sleep. They mm-hmm. just co-slept, mm-hmm. you know? It's, like, to each their own. Like, they co-slept with their daughter for probably a year before their house was done and they could put her in a crib.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't, I mean, it's, it every, like, babies are born all over the world, right? Mm-hmm. And so not everyone has a standard size crib. Not everyone has the space for a snoo or like all of these different things. Some people sleep with babies in a sling or mm-hmm. you know, I find it all so fascinating, and babies do great. You know, they do fine. I mean, there are obviously like recommendations, you're not supposed to co-sleep because it can be dangerous. But if you're safe about it, like it's fine.
Yeah.
It's a very Western perspective. The no co-sleeping thing, mm-hmm. Babies should always sleep on their back, but
statistics,
now they're saying babies should absolutely only sleep on their back because of the risk of sudden infant death syndrome. But 40 years ago, I mean, moms were putting their babies to sleep on their bellies.
Mm.
I mean, it is so interesting how things just with babies, they just work.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Out.
We were such like fragile parents where Wes like bonks his head and we take him to the emergency room say he's fine.
He's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And yet, like, I heard a story. I spent a lot of time recently reading all of the emails that were sent to us. And there was one story about this mom who had such a similar situation to the first time that Wes fell off the couch.
Oh.
And we took him to CHLA.
Right.
She had like the exact same situation where she was changing the baby on an ottoman.
Baby just
rolled over. And they thought baby was completely fine. And then, you know, baby started throwing up. And so they took him to the hospital and there was like baby had a skull fracture. I know. Can you imagine? I can imagine because at the time that happened with us,
that was the case.
I thought that my child had a skull fracture. I was like, he's injured. We have to take him to the hospital.
Oh,
he needs
God.
A CAT scan. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, babies are fragile, but they're also, you know, they're also very resilient.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so we didn't have anything prepared for Wes.
Mm-hmm.
He spent a lot of the day in the Vista Baby, you know, up a baby Vista bassinet.
Shout out, not a sponsor.
Not a sponsor. Great stroller. Love that stroller. It is the Cadillac of strollers.
Yeah, please sponsor us. Give us more strollers.
No, we do not need more strollers.
Oh, okay. Right.
That's the thing about the up a baby Vista is you need one of them and you're good to go.
So durable, reliable.
Yeah, very reliable. Wes actually loves to throw it off of our front steps to watch it tumble.
Yeah.
And it's still going strong.
Oh, it's so funny.
It's going great.
Yeah. So I guess a couple days later, it's moving day.
Yes.
We pack everything into a moving van. We've got the baby in like a little
strap
sling.
Him to the chest to our chest.
We move
into
our new house, which is still a construction zone. It's only half done. There's a piece of plywood that separates one side of the house from the side that's under construction.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like in those early days where you're breastfeeding and then 7 a.m. a construction worker contractor rounds the corner.
Yep. And you're like, morning. Like,
hello.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. I mean, if anybody's seen our house tour, we have these enormous window doors that span the entire back of the house. And I would be out in the living room because Ned would be sleeping. I'd be out in the living room on our old couch, breastfeeding, and our workers would, you know, come rolling in at about 7:30 a.m. And, you know, it's like, sup, guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were as mortified as we were, you know, because they were like, what is happening right now? Like these people just had a baby. They're living in a construction zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were trying to be as polite and quiet as possible, but also
it's hard to use a nail gun quietly.
Yeah. I do remember it being very awkward, but you know, we had half a house and that was great.
Good enough.
We had the TV. I remember the first, 2 weeks that we had Wes, I don't know if it was because he was a preemie or if this is just how newborns are. He slept most of the time.
Yeah.
And so we watched TV all the time.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice.
Kind of fun.
It was kind of nice. Yeah. I mean, we weren't sleeping.
When else can you just hit pause on your life for?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that newborns are easy because they're not.
No.
You're not sleeping. You have no semblance of routine. Apart from these, 90-minute intervals where baby sleeps for a little while, and then baby feeds, and then you play with them. I mean, it's just look at them because their eyes are open for 15
just
minutes.
Like, do faces for 30 seconds.
Yeah, yeah, and then they go back to sleep.
I think what was nice about it was we're people that put a lot on our plate. You know, we're doing a bunch of different things all at once.
For sure.
Even now. But for that moment in time, it was a very singular focus. Mm-hmm. All we were really worrying about was the baby.
That's true. And
that was sort of like a mental peacefulness that I had not quite experienced before.
And I'm realizing now how privileged we were to be able to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you were able to take time off work, that I was able to take time off work, that we had my parents there to kind of help us with this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
But also the nurses.
Yeah, your dad basically finished the deck
single-handedly. Yeah, my dad finished the deck. I mean, the nurses in the NICU helped us out a lot. Like, we did not know what we were doing. We had absolutely no idea what we were doing. We were not prepared.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here we are with a newborn, a preemie newborn, you know, a tiny little baby who, you know, yes, we were blessed that he was able to eat, you know, but what if I wasn't able to to feed him. Right, you know, we fed his best. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that. We probably would have switched to formula immediately. I actually already got some formula for the second baby just in case, because, you know, baby just needs to be fed, you know? Mm-hmm. And we didn't have anything. We didn't have a car seat. We didn't have a place for, you know, like a really, like a nice place for baby to sleep. Honestly, we didn't have a place for us to sleep because we were living in a construction zone.
Yeah, we didn't have a bed for several weeks.
Yeah, but
had a mattress on the floor.
We had friends who brought us food. We had, you know, like family members who were able to like prepare our space for us so that we could actually live with a newborn.
Like, you make it work.
It
really does take a village.
It does take a village.
You lean on all of the help that you have, whether it's friends, family, or
nurses,
you know.
They taught us how to swaddle.
Take all the help you can get.
And change a diaper. I remember the first diaper change. The nurse actually, I must have had the most just scared look on my face when she was like, "Oh, I think baby pooped." And I was like, "Sorry, what?"
How do this?
How does that work exactly? Yeah. So I just change him?
Definitely. I had some moments in those first couple of weeks where he like projectile pooped at me, like, you know, splash zone on my shirt, just like a stream of liquid poo poo, just like bullseye on my chest.
I mean, imagine if like there are probably some stories where it like goes in your mouth,
or there was the time where we walk in and there's dirty diapers strewn all around the floor and a very guilty looking puppy just being our dog, looking up at us like,
I did it.
I found the good stuff in the diapers.
I swear to God, the hole in the diaper pail is this big.
Yeah.
Bean's head is significantly larger than that.
The size of a cantaloupe.
No, that's
not
a cantaloupe.
Small cantaloupe.
No, this is the size of an orange.
Oh, right. Yeah,
this
that's
is an
what
orange.
I'm thinking of. Yeah.
And Bean's head is significantly larger than this.
Yeah,
and
how
yet,
did he get it in?
He was able to get his head into the hole of the diaper pail and pull out at least 6 diapers.
You should put that on a poster, just Bean with diapers all around, and it's like dedication.
Seriously.
The impossible can be achieved through hard work.
How long must it have taken for that dog to reach in? Like, he probably got his head stuck in there for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can only imagine.
Yep.
I guess we'll have to talk about babies and dogs in the next one.
Oh, that's a good episode.
Yeah.
We have time for one fan question.
Yeah, let me look. Okay. Thank you guys so much for sending in your emails. They are so wonderful to read, and we will be reading more of them. I pulled up a couple that people talked about the NICU specifically. Mm. And here is, let's see. This one is from an anxious preemie mom who she says, "Congrats on your new addition. I've always looked up to both of you as a couple and as parents. This week holds something special in my heart because my baby was actually born at 26 weeks. My water broke all of a sudden, and my doctor never found out why. My son was born 2 days after at a tiny 2 pounds and 2 ounces. Yes, we had a long and terrifying NICU stay, but I'm happy to report he's a healthy 2-year-old now." I love it when stories end that way. "Being a mom, and especially a preemie mom, brings so much anxiety and fear. I'm afraid of having another baby because I actually had surgery to remove my cervix due to cancer. They found the cancer after she gave birth. Put a band at the base of my uterus, but chances of me having another preemie is super high." Mm. So similar. So of course that anxiety and fear is looming, but at the same time, I want to grow my family. Mm. I suppose my question is, how do you deal with the anxiety of potentially having your baby early due to a short cervix? Do you have any fears about your current pregnancy or future ones in general? By the way, September is Premature Babies Awareness Month. So a special shout out to all the little fighters in the NICU and their parents.
All right.
I know. It's scary.
It is scary.
26 weeks. That is, that's really early.
Yeah. I think first you have to acknowledge that it's okay to be scared and anxious. I mean, it's those feelings probably are not going to go away, and they're valid.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think what reassures me is the fact that there's so many wonderful, hardworking people that know how to help get them through that time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, honestly, having a baby, going through a labor at 26 weeks, like, that's probably the worst I've heard. Like, 26 weeks is really early. That you're just past halfway through. You're still in your second trimester at that point. So I can understand how she's anxious that might happen again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we were talking about 32 weeks and how it, like, babies do much better at 32 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
26 weeks can be really, really scary. The way that I have been able to quell some of those fears is just trusting my doctors.
Yeah.
Trusting my team.
Yeah. I think back to those days in the NICU where everyone was so knowledgeable and helpful, and
they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They send babies to the NICU for a reason. And we, you know, while it was difficult, we had a good experience there.
Right. It was stressful at the time, but it was really because we didn't know anything.
Right.
After the fact, when we talked to other parents or when we talked to our friends in the medical community,
mm-hmm.
they are very, very casual about our experience of saying, oh, yeah, I'll just 48 hours in the NICU to get a little bigger. Like, that is totally, totally safe, totally normal.
Right.
Like, you guys were basically, like, we had it easy.
Yeah.
But whatever your situation is, that's what gives me hope and comfort, is knowing that there's great, hardworking people out there that are helping you.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, for a person who has gone through premature labor before, you know, there are ways that, you know, that you can keep from having a very premature baby again. There are medications and, mm-hmm. You know, things that you can do working with your medical team.
Yeah.
So,
well, thank you all for listening. That was our birth story part two. And we will see you next week for the stuff episode.
The stuff episode.
We'll talk about what happens after that. And you'll be 33 weeks pregnant. Hopefully we see you. Hopefully we're not, you know, having a baby.
It's always possible. I think I can hold him in for a little while longer. It's always possible.
You know, plot twist.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.